The tour content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Seneca's letter number 91. What is quite unlooked for is more crushing in its effect, and unexpectedness adds to the weight of a disaster. This is a reason for ensuring that nothing ever takes us by surprise. We should project our thoughts ahead of us at every turn and have in mind every possible eventuality instead of only the usual course of events. Rehearse them in your mind: exile, torture, war, shipwreck. All of the terms of our human lot should be before our eyes. Now, if you have been listening in order, not that you have to do that or anything like that, you might recognize this from the most recent episode, where I went over the reasons, the five major reasons why I value Stoicism as a Jew. I quoted this in relation to reason number four, premeditatio malorum, the premeditation or prethinking of evils, of ills, of harms. And I cited that in conjunction with the Pasuk in Mishlei, or sorry, not the Pasuk in Mishlei, the theme of Mishlei, but the statement of Chazal in Maseches Tamid, Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Ezehu Chacham Haro Es HaNolad, who is wise, one who sees what will come in the future, what the future will yield. So I am going to, in this episode, talk about what I anticipate is going to be a huge level up in my ability to practice premeditatio malorum, and that is through something called EFT, episodic future thinking. If you are a follower of my blog content on Kol HaSridim, or if you listen to Machshava Lab, one of my other podcasts, then you might have heard of this before. I wrote an article about it, two articles about it this week, because this is something I'm kind of obsessed with. And there's going to be a little bit of overlap right now, but I promise you there will be new insights and new ideas coming down the pike. Okay, so let me just go over the basic idea first, and this is going to be the part that is overlapping a blog post I wrote, I think, this past Tuesday. So I'm reading this book called Imaginable: How to See the Future Coming and Feel Ready for Anything, Even Things That Seem Impossible Today. It's by someone named Jane McGonigal, who is a game designer and future forecaster, and she specializes in doing and creating and running huge social simulations involving thousands of people of scenarios that happen in 10 years into the future, and then using that data to make future forecasts and to help with policies and plans, etc. The best example and the thing that I think prompted her to write this book now was that in 2008 she did a simulation involving, I think, 10,000 people that simulated five different global disasters or threats. One of them was a fictional respiratory pandemic that originated in China and that swept through the world. And I think the simulation lasted for 6 weeks. Basically, the simulation didn't involve any sort of like mathematics or you know, algorithms. It was all people on essentially like fake social networks imagining themselves in this future and writing their thoughts, their you know, journal entries, writing to each other, communicating, having you know, message boards play out. And it was remarkable how much they actually predicted. And you know, everything from, you know, what doing remote education would be like, to what would lead to violating stay-at-home orders, to who and why people would violate mask policies, and what the conspiracy theories were, etc. And you know, this information was largely accurate, and the you know, the CDC even like talked to her about certain things that she came up with, you know, when she was in, you know, doing the simulation. Anyway, the point though of the book, and she stresses this again and again, the point of doing this first of all, let me spell out the theory. Okay, so this is not the theory, the practice, which is called episodic future thinking. And this is her her description. This is from page 27 of the book. Episodic future thinking is the mental ability to transport yourself forward in time and pre-experience a future event. EFT is often described as a kind of mental time travel because your brain is working to help you see and feel the future as clearly and vividly as if you were already there. But EFT isn't just thinking about the future. It's simulating the future in your mind. It's the difference between knowing that it's probably going to rain tomorrow, a kind of fact or abstract thought about the future, and vividly imagining yourself in the rain, trying to pre-feel the rain on your skin, and using everything you know about what tomorrow will be like to make the scenario more detailed and realistic. EFT might entail picturing where exactly you'll be when it starts to rain, what you might be wearing, who might be with you, whether you're likely to be annoyed by the rain or delighted by it, whether you'll rush to get somewhere dry or stroll leisurely through it, and so on. End quote from the book. So essentially, it is a very specific way of practicing imagination, and, you know, constructing an entire, well, I mean, she used the right word is simulation, simulating an entire future experience with all your feelings and sensory perceptions and such, but just taking place 10 years in the future. Now, again, this is still a review of the blog post I wrote. This whole thing is very in line with Shlomo HaMelech's method in Mishlei. Saadi Gaon writes about this in his introduction to Mishlei. He writes about why mashalim, meaning examples and metaphors, are necessary. And he says, furthermore, sensory knowledge is easier and more real to the minds of the masses than intellectual knowledge, because since the sensory faculties exist in them from birth. Therefore, it is necessary to craft mashalim for the masses in order to equate the dictates of the intellect with the dictates of the senses. For this reason, when the intellect sees something detrimental or hears about something harmful and reveals it to the emotions and sees that they don't trust it or accept it, the intellect should speak with them in the manner they will understand. And I gave an example of this is, you know, it's very easy to say people who are lazy will suffer loss. Now, that's a purely intellectual principle, and your mind can grasp it, but the problem is that it's not going to be real to your emotions, and it's not going to impact your emotions. So what Shlomo HaMelech does, or what he expects us to do, and he does this in some places in Mishlei, but he really expects us to do this with everything he gives us, he expands something like that into a whole scene. So this is an excerpt from Mishlei 24, Psukim 31 through 34. I passed by the field of a lazy man, the vineyard of a man who lacks understanding, and behold, it was all grown over with thistles. Its face was covered with nettles, and the stone wall was broken down. And I beheld, and I applied my mind and took discipline. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to recline, and your poverty will come like a traveler, and your lacking like an armed man. So he's doing three things here, right? One is he is vividly depicting the scenario. It's not just saying a lazy guy. It's saying picture his field and his vineyard, see the nettles and the thorns covering, and see how the wall that, you know, is supposed to be strong, it's a stone wall, is all broken down. And then he says, now vividly picture what led there. It wasn't just he is lazy. It's a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to recline. And then those are two examples. And then meaning that's mushal in the sense of example. And then he uses mushal in the sense of a metaphor. Your poverty will come like a traveler and you're lacking like an armed man, you know, like suddenly showing up out of nowhere at your door. So that is what I wrote about in that blog post. And I mentioned that there are many applications of this, which I'd like to explore in the blog and on this podcast. Okay, so now for the new content. Okay, the passage I read from Seneca was about premeditatio malorum, which is about thinking about what can happen before it happens. Now, I have to admit that before I read this book, I kind of thought that premeditatio malorum, I related to it primarily as an intellectual exercise of thinking about what might happen and then planning for it. On one episode, I don't remember what the episode was called. I did, in fact, let me look at it now. Yeah, so I called it, this is on March 9th, 2022, Extreme Premeditatio Malorum. and this was Vaynerchuk style. So this is a clip I heard from Gary Vaynerchuk when he describes like really vividly imagining the bad thing happening and how you're going to feel. That was really my first exposure to this this new level of Premeditatio Malorum. But essentially, what McGonagall is helping me to realize is that you really have to, it's not enough to just plan it. I mean, that's on a Mishleic level, on a rudimentary Mishleic level, then that's good. But in order to really get the benefits of it, you have to allow yourself to imagine it in vivid detail and feel it, and then it'll have an impact on you. And what I want to do is I want to read a lengthier excerpt from McGonagall's book where she talks about the type of benefits that this confers upon you. Okay, and again, this is a couple paragraphs. And she begins with testimony from one of the participants in the 2008 pandemic simulation. Okay, so she writes like this. This is on pages 82 and 83. In early 2021, a participant in the 2008 Superstruck pandemic simulation reached out to me with a particularly striking email. Things that came up during the pandemic this year felt more like familiar old memories instead of new experiences, he wrote. I have felt weirdly less traumatized by things other people were freaking out about. McGonagall goes on, this makes sense. Vividly imagining a possible future creates memories of things we haven't actually experienced, lived through yet. So the pandemic felt familiar to him. And research suggests that future memories have a real psychological benefit if and when a traumatic future we imagined actually happens. It's not just that we're less surprised by what happens. We also get a significant boost of self-confidence from having been right about the future. And this confidence makes us more likely to take action and help others. Here's why. The fact that we saw the future coming before it happened creates a specific response in the brain. The very first emotion we feel isn't shock, but recognition. We recognize this strange new world because we've spent time there in our imagination before. Recognition communicates to us, saying, you know this, you've got this. It's a powerful antidote to feelings of helplessness and fear. Our foreknowledge of what happened causes us to feel less overwhelmed, more in control, and better able to help. Angus Fletcher, a neuroscientist who studies the effects of storytelling on the brain, has described it in this way, quote from Fletcher, that position of foreknowledge stimulates a powerful sensation of cosmic irony in the perspective-taking network of our brain's prefrontal cortex, giving us a godlike experience of looking down on events. End quote from Fletcher. This may remind you of the benefits of zooming out to a 10-year timeline to adopt a third-person perspective. Foreknowledge causes the exact same mindset shift, only this time it's triggered by a feeling of, I've seen this all before. Fletcher goes on, This God's eye vantage reduces activity in our brain's deep emotion zones, acting as a neural shock absorber against the traumatic events before us. This neural feeling is deeply therapeutic. It shifts our tragic feeling of helplessness into a psychological sensation of helpfulness. Okay, and that's end quote from Fletcher, end quote from McGonagall. So interesting thing. So she starts off just by saying, you know, that this guy who went through the pandemic simulation didn't feel as surprised, right? But then she explains it, that there's two things. One is that you are not going to experience the shock, but rather recognition, and you'll feel like, oh, I've had this experience before, right? And in fact, I read this to one of my students, or one of my former students. This is a student who was formerly homeschooled and before high school, and then she went to high school. So she told me, when I read this, she told me that when the pandemic hit and we had to transition to remote learning, she said that a lot of her friends were freaking out about it. And for her, then it was familiar territory. So she said she freaked out way less about all the stresses of remote schooling, and she really focused much more on the stresses of the people dying. You know, now not that that's a judgment on the other kids, but like, it was exactly what McGonagall is describing, that for her this was familiar territory. And then the other point, and I had never considered this point before, that McGonagall said is that you have the added boost of confidence of, oh, I've been through this before, I've got this. And that's the funny thing, that even though you didn't actually go through the situation, the fact that you simulated it in your mind is enough. And that Fletcher, also the fact, you know, he specializes, I guess, in the effects of storytelling on the brain, same thing. Like you can, if you have read a book or watched a movie, that is well written or well, acted, you know, whatever, well depicted, it's not the same as experience, but it can affect the brain in the same ways, you know, enough to the point where it's going to change how you experience the situation that you anticipated. One more thing she said at the end was, or the, really that Fletcher said, that the God's eye vantage reduces activity in our brain's deep emotion zones, acting as a neural shock absorber against the traumatic events before us. So let me hold on just 1 second. I'm going to pause this. So this is something that Marcus Aurelius talks about in several places. I'm just going to read one example from Meditations, Book 9, Chapter 30. He says, look down from above on the countless gatherings and countless ceremonies and every sort of voyage in storm and calm and the disputes between those being born, living together, and dying. Think also of the life that was lived by others long ago and that will be lived after you, and that is being lived now in other countries. Think of how many don't know your name at all, how many will quickly forget it, how many who perhaps praising you now will soon be finding fault. Realize that being remembered has no value, nor does your reputation, nor anything else at all. Or here's another one from Meditations, Book 12, Chapter 24. If being suddenly lifted up in midair, you should examine human affairs and their variety from above, you will look down upon them. And however often you are lifted up, you will see the same things, the same kind, their short duration, vanity on account of these things. So both of these are are examples of Marcus Aurelius implementing this godlike perspective of looking down from above that removes the shock of the bad and also the elation from the good. So I have, again, this is just a few, I'm only halfway through this book right now, but I just wanted to share a few smatterings of thoughts about how I think that the practice of EFT is going to affect and improve my ability to engage in premeditatio malorum and have all these other side benefits. And by the way, when I say practicing it, how am I going to do that? So I've made a, I've set up an experiment, one of my, my usual experiments here, that for the next 30 days, and I'm saying next 30 days, I'm recording this before I post it. So I don't know how many more days are left. I think I've done 4 or 5 days. I bought a journal, which I'm calling the EFT notebook, the EFT journal, and I am doing roughly for 10 minutes a day, sometimes longer, sometimes a little shorter, doing EFT scenario free writes. So, for example, my first one was one I came up with on my own, which was writing a journal entry that takes place 10 years in the future about how my morning went teaching, you know, and I was shocked. You know, it's a very weird thing that when you actually put yourself in that scenario, you think in different ways and it opens up different avenues of thought than if I were to just ask you, like, from an intellectual perspective, how do you think things will be different 10 years in the future? You know, like I found myself, I don't want to go into this example now, maybe I'll go through it in the future, but I found myself like having realizations or of questions or answers or options that I only realized because I had mentally simulated the future and not just thinking about it intellectually. So I did that for my first one. My second one, I did one of her future scenarios that she suggests in the book that 10 years in the future, imagine you get an alarm on your phone that that from, you know, like Amber Alerts, like everyone gets them, right? So everyone gets this alarm that says that the government is announcing an emergency shutdown of the internet and all cellular phone service for the next 2 weeks. And this commences at 12 o'clock p.m. and you look at your watch and it's 11:50 a.m. You know, so this exercise requires that you like write about what your thoughts are, you know, again, simulate the future, write about what your thoughts are, what you do, who you call, what your feelings are, what your thoughts are. Like, are you going to think about why is the government doing this? Are you going to think you're under a cyber attack? You know, and you write this out. And again, I did this exercise and I did it as a free write, not just as an intellectual exercise. Found myself very surprised by what I thought of and what I, you know, where my mind went. So I look forward to reporting back on how this EFT practice goes. And I'm sure I will also report on the benefits in Stoicism and in Mishlei and other areas of Judaism as well. Stay tuned. Okay, that is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweis and my Zelle and PayPal are MattSchneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at RabbiSchneeweis@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.